Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, the world. How are you? I usually say, hey, America. Today, it's the world. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And more importantly, I'm an avid, lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth. Airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Jesse Riley.
Hey, Chad. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
And I don't want to spoil a surprise by saying why we said world and not America.
Why did we?
Well, because Paleolithic is the world. It's not America.
See. This is why I have you. You're brilliant. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about, but it probably makes sense, and it's brilliant. Which brings up the point, we have a guest today. My very special guest is Michael Kochman.
Hello. How's it going?
Hey.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
So you're saying, who the hell is Michael Kochman, and why is he in studio? Well,
yeah, because Chad's always digging up great guests. I mean, I don't mean like literally digging, but finding.
Thank you. Thank you. I know Michael through my school, and he is a culinarian studying in the Institute of Culinary Education. He's doing the management program. Who knows? He did the pastry program. Brilliant mind. More importantly than any of that, he's a great guy. I like him. And he is practicing or subscribes to the paleo diet, right, Mike?
That is correct, yes.
And I didn't know, you know, when he told me, I was like, oh, yeah, I heard of that. They eat meat or something, right? And I was like, oh, who cares? I eat meat too, you know. But I started researching a little bit. It goes obviously a lot deeper than just eating meat.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, I mean, I'd like you to explain to us, I mean, what's different about it? I mean, I've read a little, but I'd like to hear from your perspective. I mean, and I'm sure some people, then a follow-up would be, well, is it like true paleo? Like, what were people really eating back then? We have a little knowledge of that. And then how you adapt that for today.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the main premise, the thought behind it, is to try to emulate as closely as possible the diets that we evolved eating. So obviously there was no packaged products, things mm-hmm. like that. So it's really just focused on eating whole, unprocessed foods, you know, meats, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, things like that. But the big thing about this, as opposed to other, you know, it gets lumped in with low carb diets, mm-hmm. You know, and the big difference, with a lot of the other things, is that this really focuses on eating clean, you know, grass-fed, pasture-raised, you know, nothing that's been given antibiotics or hormones or anything like that, nothing conventionally raised. And the other big tenet of paleo is not eating grain. That's really
right.
The big thing.
So that means like no grains, like not even I read something said like no legumes, like no lentils,
right,
no beans.
Yeah. Anything, yeah, like beans, you know, they need to be somewhat processed before you can eat them. So really the whole thought process is anything that needs to be processed in any way. Now, obviously, you know, there's going to be some leeway there.
Right, like you could sprout beans or
sure.
stuff like that.
Yeah. But really that, you know, the idea, you know, you can get into, there's the phytic acid and lectins and things like that, mm-hmm. you know, like that also gets involved when it comes to like legumes and things like that. But really it's just about being like, if you can't pick it up off the ground and eat it, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be eating it. That's really kind of the whole premise behind it.
And is that what then has motivated you to go into hunting now?
That wasn't really the motivation. That, I think, is sort of what kind of made it click, though. Actually, it was really being in class with Chef Chad, who obviously talked about hunting quite a bit.
I'm the messiah. I'm the hunting messiah.
Yeah.
No, I see the halo forming.
But let me
right now.
Let me just jump in a little bit here, just to give you a little background. So Michael, you know, was in my class, excellent student. I liked him from the beginning. Mm-hmm. He's a man's man. He's a guy. He gets his job done. Hard work, good work ethic. You know, one of those students.
Yeah.
So we would chit chat and everything. And but before every class, just to kind of set the tone or maybe get some adrenaline going, I would always go off on these little tirades about things, and some of them were about food and stuff. And I would look over at him, and he would be shaking his head. Yes.
Yeah. You know. So you know you've got a kindred spirit.
Right. And that led to, you know, me discussing with him. Or me discussing with the whole class whether they wanted to hear it or not about hunting or, you know, what to eat, what not to eat. And I would make fun of students who came in with Coca-Cola or uh-huh. Red Bull or some other packaged processed crap that's not food. And I mean, he's doing it right now. He would mm-hmm. do his, I would see his little head shake and I would say, okay, this guy,
right.
you know, sees clearly. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to give you that. So that's yeah. what kind of led to, I think, him maybe questioning me.
No, it was. Yeah. I mean, it was, I obviously was, I thought on the same level of like anything, you know, like any,
right.
yeah, because a lot of people in the class, they do come in with all these like yep. disgusting packaged, horrible things that you're just like, ugh. You know, and then so I would sort of on the side, I would talk to the chef and, you know, mm-hmm. it just through those conversations about hunting and this and that. And he recommended a few books to me to check out, which I've been reading. And it all just sort of began clicking, right. Making a lot of sense. Just my philosophy on food and how I feel about it. It makes sense for me to then be like, you know what, if I can't go out and harvest it myself, then... you know, what am I really talking
right,
about
because
here?
we can all complain, you know, we could go on and on about like how you can't buy yogurt that doesn't have pectin and guar gum in it.
Mm.
You know, but if I want to do something about that, then I have to take some responsibility for how I get my food.
Sure. So it all just dovetails very well together with, you know, how I feel about food, how I feel about the way our food is, even the food that is, you know, you are able to purchase, you know, how I feel about the right way to go about doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think conventionally raised animals, it's a terrible,
mm-hmm.
terrible industry. And it's, you know, it's providing food certainly, for people that they need, but it's food that's not processed properly, it's not as healthy. And it's, you know, I just think that for me then to be able to go out and, you know, get my own food, it just goes hand in hand. You know?
Right. There's the whole issue about, well, is it healthy for us? It's not healthy for us. I think so many people have pointed that out. And also downstream, the effect, the unseen effect on our economy.
Mm.
Right, because there's a lot of money that goes into raising animals that way, and then all the pollution from it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it.
So yeah. So it looks like a cheap food source, but it really isn't.
How right. many times have I gone off on you vegetarians running around? You vegetarian. Oh, I'm doing so much. You animal rights activists. You do more to hurt animals, this environment, through the farming industry than any other group of people I could think of. You've cleared woods to grow your vegetables that took away the environment for the animals. The animals have nowhere to live now. You look at Vermont, you know,
mm-hmm.
right? I think we've talked about this,
yeah.
or I've talked about it in my head. I don't know. You know, 1700 merino wool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Merino? Yeah, merino wool. They decimated that. They cut down every tree in Vermont just about to raise their sheep. And that got rid of the wolf, the deer, the raccoon. They ran every animal out of Vermont. It's back now, thank God, because that industry died, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, all of this has an impact on the environment. It's a bigger picture. And I love what Mike's saying because he's just one man doing his thing. He's not preaching like, you know, like I do a little bit. I get it. But... you know, he's practicing what he preaches, or, you know, he's practicing what he's trying to live out, and that's all you could do. And if everyone did that, if all you lazy people sitting at home staring at your computer screen right now actually got off your ass like Mike, you could get into this, what do we want to call it? I still don't know, this lifestyle, I guess, of sustainability. Everyone likes to wear the T-shirt and run around. I got this somewhere.
Well, you know,
shoot your own animals.
Well, you know, like now that we're talking about it, right, because we had talked about this last week. We had a guest who was familiar with hunting in Scotland. And it's a different model because there you can sell the meat that you hunt,
mm.
right? But here we can't.
Right.
And it almost makes me think, you know, we could barter it. you know, right? Because you get a deer, you got a whole deer. Maybe you don't want to have a freezer full of whole deer.
Right.
Right? But you could have a friend who doesn't have the motivation to hunt but has some other skill, and you trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. He has vegetables. He has. He's a fisherman. I like to fish, but not that much. So I got venison. Hey, you went trout fishing? Bring over the trout. And guess what, NSA and government? We do that already. I don't know if that's illegal or not, but we do it. It's called being a neighbor. You know, I get so much joy from sharing my harvest with other people. And we all do, I think, as humans, right? Yeah. We're all one community. And when I could share something that I worked hard at and you know, venison as the example, right? Mm-hmm. The first day, I can't wait to give half my venison away to the landowner I hunted on, to my neighbor, to the person who I've never, you know, who's never experienced it. Just to give them that experience of eating wild game. It's great to see their face, whether they like it or not at the end of the day.
Well, you think about, I mean, how communal food is in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then when you take it to the level of, I actually went out and harvested this myself, and now you're sharing it with people. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, really, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. And that's the point of this. And that's really, you are the epitome of the wild game domain. This is what it's about, bringing people in, people committed to, you know, somewhat of a lifestyle, of a way of thinking, a way of living, and practicing what we preach, hunting, gathering. Right. And listen, I had Stephen Ranella, one of the, you know, a world-class hunter, one of the best hunters on the face of the earth. The guy has the ability to hunt anywhere in the world, you know, of meat eater fame. If you don't know him, look him up.
I'm reading it right now.
You're reading it right now. And even he admits, you know, he's got to go to the supermarket every once in a while and buy food. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't stock enough. He doesn't kill enough. So will I ever get to the level where I'm completely sustaining myself and my family on wild game? Probably not. But you know what? If 50%, if 60% of my meat comes from the field, I'm feeling real, real good about that. Then I could, you know, the rest of my meat could come from, you know, more expensive outlets, you know, grass-fed, you know, where it's going to cost a little more than going to Stop and Shop, but I could sustain the rest of my nutritional needs that way.
Right. Well, there are a lot of farmers, like in upstate New York and in New Jersey, where you can buy a share in an animal that's been grass-raised.
Well, that's my family. I convinced my family, actually, after it took a little convincing. But, we've purchased, you know, whole cow, whole pig, whole lamb, all pasture-raised, you know, from local farms, you know. Right. And it winds up being cheaper than buying conventionally raised meat in the supermarket, you know. Once I proved that to my parents, they were like, all right, maybe we'll do this.
Yeah, because the number, it looks like a large number when you look at half an animal, but when you actually look at what you get from that and break it down, it's actually a very good deal.
Per pound, it winds up being cheaper. And you know that you're, you know, not only eating healthier, eating better, you know, but you're helping local farmers, and you know, it all just ties in beautifully together. And it's interesting when you use the word lifestyle, because that's sort of a buzzword with the paleo community too. Like they, like all people, they will say, don't call it the paleo diet. They say it's more of a lifestyle. Like a diet has, just the word has a connotation of a beginning and an end. You go on a diet and then you reach your goal and then you come off the diet. It's not about being on a diet. It's the lifestyle. You know, you eat this way for your life. You know, it's not a diet. It, you know, in the traditional sense.
Right.
So. Right. In the corrupted sense that we, you know, because we've corrupted that word diet. To
mean, right.
I'm suffering, I'm losing weight, or you know, for some reason I have to restrict what I eat or my enjoyment from food. And that's not the definition of a diet.
It's not about a understanding food and nutrition in your body and what you need.
You know, the word itself has a negative connotation at this point because people think, oh, I'm on a diet. Oh, it's going to be horrible, blah, blah, blah. It's, your diet is comprised of certain foods. So that's why, you know, people like to say this is more of a lifestyle as opposed to a diet in the as we've come to know the word diet.
All right. So listen, with that, why don't we take a short break? We'll take it right here. When we come back on the Wild Game Domain, we're going to talk about kind of your journey into the sport of hunting.
Sounds good.
Fair enough. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Quittin' Time by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Wild Game Domain, everybody.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and I'm joined here today on the Wild Game Domain by my co-host, Jesse Riley, and our special guest, the paleo expert, as I'm calling him now, Michael Kochman. And before the break...
Yeah, so I just wanted to ask you, is there like, with this, looking at it this way, are you going for, like, you've got the U.S. pyramid, right? Mm. Which is heavily on grains, even though they've rejiggered it.
They have, yes.
Still too heavy on grains. And, like, is there, like, a range, a target that you'd look at as far as the balance of proteins, animal proteins, to vegetables?
Yeah, in fact, they're actually... What got me started in paleo, actually, was a book called The Primal Blueprint by Mark Sisson, who is, you know, he's one of the bigger names in that community, and he's sort of created his own food pyramid, and it really, yeah, the bulk of your diet, again, it's meat and vegetable, really. So vegetables are every meal you want to eat tons and tons of vegetables. I mean, unlimited amounts of vegetables, really. And then meat, yeah, it's, I guess, again, it depends on who you speak to. Certain paleo people will say only eat lean meats, you know, whereas others are fine with it. Because the whole, one of the other things that, you know, sort of turned something on its head was the idea of fat and, you know, how fat has been so vilified, through, especially in this country, and how really it's not bad for you. In fact,
actually,
it's quite good for you.
We need fat. Babies need fat to develop their brains.
Absolutely. Well, that, you know, and that was one of the other sort of, you know, side notes to this, is that, you know, you need fat and protein to survive. You don't need carbohydrates, really, to survive. Your body, you know, you can go into ketosis. You know, you can, there are ways that your body will deal with not with having low or no carbohydrates. So the bulk, a lot of times the bulk of your calories will come from fat. I mean, there was, when I first started doing this, I'd say 50 to sometimes 70% of my daily calories was from fat, which... You know, for the longer, like, people would be like, oh my goodness, like, what are you doing, you know? Yeah, but as far as the amount of intake, I think it depends. You know, me personally, I do more of I kind of have a fitness aspect to the way I eat. I mean, I eat a pound of meat every day. But I also eat a ridiculous amount of vegetables on top of that, too. So it's...
And then, of course, you balance that with whatever activity. Like, if you're not as physically active, you're going to consume less.
Well, that was... Yeah, and for me, you know, with... You know, if you're more active, you know, I've introduced more carbohydrate back into my diet because of being active. But if, you know, if you're more sedentary, then you'd want to keep it at a lower carbohydrate. It all depends on what your goals are, really. So, but yeah, no, I mean, I eat a standard pound of meat every day, and then 4 eggs with that, usually on top of that.
Wow.
It's like, so. Michael Phelps. All right, so I want to talk a little bit now about, so this paleo diet and this kind of lifestyle, and I guess brought about the idea of hunting. Well, I'm going to take it to the next level, our discussions.
Sure.
And that journey started for you already. And where are you now in that?
Well, now I, you know, I got my hunter certification. I just got my bow certification on Sunday.
So New York State certified. He's passed hunter safety.
Yeah, hunter,
I guess,
education.
Hunter education.
Yeah.
Which is a prereq for the bow hunters.
Right.
Safety course. So you are now, you're not licensed yet, but you are.
No.
You are eligible.
I'm eligible to
get
purchase
his license.
Yes.
All right, that's good.
Yeah, and I bought myself a rifle, nice 30-06 Mossberg. Nice.
As per my recommendation,
yes.
You old timers out there will appreciate the 30-06, man.
Right.
It's a great all-purpose round. And you even went as far as I told you about the Mossberg, which I said, you know, go check out the Mossberg, a reasonably priced rifle.
Yeah.
And a lot of people hear the term, the word, or the name Mossberg, and they think shotguns, like you should. They make a fine shotgun, a lot of self-defense type shotguns, things like that. But they branched out, I don't know, 10 years ago, I guess, give or take, into rifles, and they're making a fine hunting rifle now. It's still the ATR. The all-terrain rifle, which I remember when I was looking, I thought it was a little goofy, the whole ATR and all-terrain rifle, they're all all-terrain, but it's got a composite stock on it, you know, plastic, basically, high-impact plastic. That you could beat on, drop, get soaking wet, you don't have to worry about it. Free-floating barrel, which we know, you know, that means the barrel of the rifle doesn't come in contact with the stock, so there's no distortion through weather or humidities. The metal is a lot more resilient than plastic, so it's going to be accurate. And it, you said, I think you mentioned, it just felt good.
Yeah, it felt right. I held a couple different ones, and it just, you know, it just felt good in my hands. So I was like, this is the one.
And that's good. And it was a package. It had a scope.
Yeah, it's a great starter rifle. You know, it seems ideal to, you know, for the first timer.
That's perfect. You know, and that might be all you need. You know, I'm not one of those guys as a rifle enthusiast that tell you got to go out and spend $1,000 on a rifle. To me, that's actually a little ridiculous just to go kill an animal with.
On a bow, though, it might be a different story.
It's a different story. It's a few more parts on there.
Yeah, this is, and that would be the next step. I haven't invested in a bow yet, so that's I got to start doing some research there.
Well, between the two of you here, you're almost a complete hunter.
That's
almost outfitted completely. So what I thought now, you know, Jesse, this is your show. I mean, what else do you want to talk about? Last week we were talking about what we need.
Do you know all the gear that you need?
No, not at all. In fact, that was one of the reasons why, you know, when we were talking before the show, I was like, oh, this will be perfect, because I was asking, you know, exactly those questions. Like, what do I need? What kind of gear? You know, like,
Maybe we should put this on the website.
We should. We should use the website for something.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a good idea.
Well, because we were actually talking, you said, you know, when you started out, you used to lug the heavy backpack, and you had all this, that, and the other. And, of course, when I was in my class, they were like, make sure you get the backpack and have, you know, 8 gallons of water and this, that, and the other. And you're just like,
And you're going to climb up in the tree stand with
that. That's the thing. I mean, like, between the rifle and the tree stand and then everything else, it's like, do you really need all that stuff?
Because we're going into the outback, and you never know. We might get attacked by something in the New York woods.
Right, exactly.
Listen, I'm never going to sit here and tell you not to be safe or be prepared for anything when you go out in the woods. But like I was telling Mike, if I'm going 300 yards into the woods from my car where my tree stand is, I'm pretty certain, A, I don't need a compass to find my way out. Where I'm hunting, I could hear 3 of the 4 streets that border and the cars and traffic. So I know I can make my way to a street someone down.
Echolocate your way back.
So the point is, you don't need to pack out your rucksack with a week's worth of survival gear like I used to do, and the gadgets too, plus the binoculars and the calls, and then I would bring this and always bring a backup pair of gloves in case they get wet. And I started realizing, you know what? Really, for a day hunt out there, I could pack everything into my cargo pockets, the pockets on my jacket, and just layer everything in. If anything, when I'm carrying my backpack, it maybe has an extra jacket that I'm going to put on, because I'm walking in, I'm gonna start sweating. I don't want to get too hot, so I'm stripped down as much as possible. When I get in the tree stand after a couple hours, I might get chilly.
Right.
Throw a jacket on here or there. So you want to travel as light as possible and uncomplicate the hunt as much as possible. Instead of getting up in the tree stand, clanging around all this equipment, and I found that I was using maybe 10% of it, and 10% of it fits in my cargo pockets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if you got a suffer a little bit with your mittens instead of your gloves, you know, you'll be okay at the end of the day. Minimalize what you're taking out there. Equipment and gear, you know, especially what you're wearing, is very important. You know, you got to hunt, you know, depending on the weather. Like I was telling Jesse last week, October 1st, I've been out there. It's been 70 degrees.
Right.
So you're going to need an array of gear. You're going to need some light weather gear, some mid, you know, mid-range gear, and then some heavy gear. But that, it's really one set of clothing. It's just you're wearing less of it.
You're just layering it.
Layering it. That's what you want to do. You could spend a fortune on this stuff, or I was giving Jesse, start shopping now online. As things pop up, buy them. I might not need that, but you know what? It's 50% off now in August or the end of July. Buy it. You're going to need it eventually, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And you know, we were talking about camo patterns, right?
Right. Mm.
You know, my theory on that is go light as possible. Realtree is a great pattern. Realtree sells that pattern to every company out there. So if you could stick with Realtree, but you know what? If you're wearing mossy oak pants and a Realtree jacket, who cares? If that's what 50% off is, buy it and have it.
Right.
You know.
In the class, they did say if you're going to really invest in an article of clothing, it was good boots. So make sure you have good boots. Keep your feet warm.
Well, we were talking about that, right? Because, like, do you want a boot that's too heavy or
We talked
the
about
right
that,
weight?
Too. Yeah. And first of all, I'm a man. I don't get cold.
You don't get cold feet.
I don't get cold feet because I'm a man. No, listen, just through my military, I guess, training and, you know, being out in the woods a lot, my ability to absorb suffering is a lot higher than a lot of the guys I hunt with, truthfully. So I wear basically what would be considered an early season boot all year. And that's my thing. And what I do is I just buy it a size too big. Because, again, I'm not going on these hunts where I'm hiking for miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going, you know, a mile into the woods, that's a long way for me on a hunt. So, you know, I'll put on an extra pair of wool socks and be fine for the day when it gets down into the lower 20s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my thing.
Well, my concern is, like, if you get a boot that's too heavy and you're not moving around, then, like, the sweat builds up in your boot and then you get cold.
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, all of that's a consideration. A good Gore-Tex line boot, you know, Gore-Tex is going to grab that moisture, pull it away. It is one of the things I guess I would invest in. I have invested in. I was telling you last week, Redhead boots. Redhead's the brand name from Bass Pro, Pro Bass. I always mess that up. And they were reasonably priced, man. I got them for like $100, I think. Mm-hmm. They're 10 years old now. There's not a scratch on them. They're in great condition. I take care of them. And then I have one other. They're like the rubber scent-free boots that come up to your knees. They were Bone Collector Realtree camo boots, and they're 100% scent-proof is what's good about them.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'll wear them on certain hunts. I find it hard in slippery weather when it's raining or snowing to climb my tree stand with them. They're all rubber.
Oh, yeah.
And they tend to slip a little bit. So I got to be real careful if I decide to wear them in that kind of weather. You know, so, but that, listen, that shit you got to figure out. You got to get out there. No one's going to tell you. All the advice I took from people over the years, and I grew up hunting, so it was a little different. Kind of it evolved for me more. So there's really not a right or wrong to it. It's going to be your comfort zone. I'm going to tell you to buy this certain release or buy a certain jacket or, you know, just really analyze it and think about it because it is an investment. Keep it simple and make sure it works. Try it on. Wear it with the layers. Pull your bow back with the jacket. You know, I've gone as far as put a jacket on and then go over at Cabela's over to the where they have the arrows and be like, hey, can I draw that? Can I draw that bow back? Mm-hmm. And to see if there was really enough room in the shoulder for me to draw back. It's those stupid little things that you find out that I found out on the hunt. Oh, all of a sudden I go to draw back and I can't.
Mm.
I'm like, shit, I love this jacket until now, you know, as the deer's laughing at me.
Right.
So, you know, it's that type of stuff you gotta be careful of.
There was something you were talking about last week, which is like the UV reflectiveness or something.
Yeah, so a lot of this older gear, I think more the newer equipment, it's not so much of a worry. The older stuff, apparently, and I don't know about manufacturing clothing, but they use UV brighteners or something in fabrics, I guess. Like the shirt I'm wearing right now, it couldn't be any louder. And there's probably UV brighteners in it to get the more
whiter whites.
Whiter white, the bluer blues. And you absolutely don't want that in your hunting clothing. The they figured out that deer see levels of UV light that we don't, or they can register UV better than we. So Google it, and you'll see the comparison. They show you the hunter, the what the deer sees when the hunter's wearing clothes with this added UV material or compound in it. You're basically glowing in the middle of the woods compared to. So, the spectrum for the deer vision is different, because the old way of thinking was deer just see black and white.
Right.
It's not true. They see shades of colors, and there's on the UV spectrum, they see purples and things like that. Not that you would ever wear a big – I would shoot you myself, Mike, if you go out there wearing – and I would eat you, of course, because the paleo thing. But you would wear a big purple hat. You're not going to do that anyhow.
Yeah.
But, the oranges, the old orange suits and all that stuff, a lot of that had UV and to make it brighter orange so the other hunters could see. Well, guess what? That guy never killed a deer.
So are they taking that stuff out of hunting clothing now?
Yeah. Most of them are the newer stuff. But you still got to be careful. Like, you find a great deal on something. It's a great deal for some reason, right?
Mm.
So, just research it before you go out and buy it. Even at a 50% off, for a good hunting jacket, you're going to pay, over $100 more, I mean, my jacket was $300, which is a little ridiculous. Hopefully my wife's not listening. But, it was perfect. It had the sleeve zipper. It has the scent proofing. It has, it has everything I wanted in a jacket. It has the detachable hood. I could wear the hood or not wear the hood. It's got the elastic waistband where I could tighten it down in cold weather but open it so I could breathe.
Right.
It's got the zippers and the armpits. So it's what you pay for.
Perfect jacket.
Yeah. And unfortunately, guess what time it is? Again, we didn't finish this
amazing
goddamn topic again. But that's all right. We're gonna make a promise to each other
right
now and to you, the world, that we're gonna get something up on our website with some guidelines.
Some
links to some
people starting out, some basic information.
Yeah, and we'll call it Hunting 101 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go to it, and we'll have various links that you could click on, stuff that the Wild Game Domain recommends. And get you started. And we're always available to take a phone call or an email from you guys if you're really out there listening and you're interested in this. Mike's doing it. So get off your ass and do it. And you have our support. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Mike?
No, this was great. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it. You're a natural. I think you should have your own radio show, actually. I'm going to talk to Joe after the show.
That's the next step in my evolution.
And I also didn't do a recipe again, so I had this great turkey burger I was going to do in honor of the paleo.
Turkey burger.
Yeah, and then I thought that was stupid because what are you going to eat it on?
Right.
Broccoli. Yeah. Layer of broccoli or something.
You always got to eat it without the bun.
Yeah, you could eat a burger without a bun, I guess. So... like I said, that's all the time we have, and I'd like to thank Joe for producing and engineering today's show. You could always find archived episodes of the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Thank you, world.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.